All right, final hour overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 2. Brian Hazio, Doug Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan. We've got Brian Windhorst of ESPN coming up in about 5 minutes. We'll revisit our conversation with Sheldon Keefe. Got into a lot of different things with Sheldon. The Leafs coming off an impressive win last night. You know, another 3-1 blown lead, but they dominated that game. The power play, that's as good as the power play is going to look. Like, it was, those were not fluky goals. Those were set plays and execution.
Set plays I found were amazing. It was like you thought it was teed up for Austin Matthews, and it was like that play's designed for him, and then boom, was on Tavares sticking in the net. It was like, and if you ever go down and watch them practice it, it's pretty special to watch them. They're like, they get out there and they go through every option and all the, like, they zip that thing around, man. It's impressive.
Well, you look at
which
the talent,
made you wonder how the hell what happened last year. Didn't they go
no
like,
kidding. Down the stretch, the last 20 games last year was like historically awful, the power play. Crazy bad. And this year didn't really, there's been some ups and downs the first half of the season, but it's cooking now, and last night was rolling. And you put that much talent on the ice, that should be the case, right?
One thing that, for me, that has put them over the top is their work ethic on it. The puck recoveries. Like, when I watched Edmonton at the start of the year, and they were cooking at, like, whatever, 50%, something ridiculous.
Yep.
They were working hard to get the puck back. I think the Leafs have done that consistently. And when you work the puck, work that hard to outnumber and get the puck back, then you know, now you go to work again. Like, it's a philosophy that's quite simple, but it's hard to execute. Like, it's hard to, hey, we got to outwork that. A lot of times, teams will relax on the power play. They've got time. They've got space. You got to go the other way. Outwork the five, you know, work the 5-on-4 situation. And the Leafs have done that really well. Like, their pursuit of the puck, any loose puck battles, go and get it. Like, that type of outnumbering every situation. That's the one thing I've noticed about their power play to make it very effective. You know, Shattenkirk, he had it on his stick, the one power play goal, and he doesn't get it down. Because they force him to turn that puck over, and then they're able to set it up right again, and they end up scoring on that play.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. It's easy to get lazy on the power play because you just assume the puck will find you. You'll find open ice.
But you see sometimes guys just relax. It's like, okay, we know we've got the extra guy. We've got 2 minutes to do this. If anything, the good power plays you've noticed, they ramp it up instead of relaxing. And that's one thing I've noticed with the Maple Leafs power.
Well, how about Mitch Marner now on a heater on the power play?
Yeah,
one-timers.
Yeah, fine on the far post.
Yeah.
So, you know, good for him. That's a couple of power play goals in the last three games, and that streak is, it's dead now. No one cares that you won almost 100 games.
It's pretty crazy. You're talking about a player that's that talented going 2 years without scoring a power play goal.
Yeah, that's going to stick out, clearly.
it's an outlier for sure.
But, you know, he looks good. He looks really good. Our buddy Jonas was, he had an interesting tweet last night, and I don't know what it means, but the last time, you know, Marner's been in the lineup his last 23 games, they are 23-0. 20 wins, 3 losses, and 0 overtime or shootout losses. So it's probably just a cherry-picked, coincidental type of stat because the Leafs have been winning
what?
A lot of games.
But they're paid for wins. The money's for wins. I
works
say it all
something.
The time.
Yep.
That's what Jonas does. He cherry picks.
He finds something
and then
positive.
He whispers. I told you, he whispers into his Twitter account. The Leafs are 23-0 the last time Marner has played all those games.
That's right. 23
you know
games.
Yeah. Right?
Well, listen, hey, you can't. Stats are stats. Stats are stats. Wordle, Team Corsi. I mean, the stats are the stats. The eye test doesn't change that reality that they're winning a lot of hockey games lately. So. We'll get into that with Sheldon Keefe a little bit later this hour. Brian Windhorst will join us in a moment. Tough to get a read on what's up with James Harden because I saw a report, there were multiple reports earlier this week, that he hates Brooklyn, like living in Brooklyn, and really isn't a big fan of Kyrie Irving. And now I think it was Woj that came out and said, no, he loves Brooklyn, it's all good. So what is up with James Harden?
Yeah,
where is he at? And he's still being linked to Daryl Morey and Philly, and I think Philly's lost all of their leverage when it comes to Ben Simmons. He's not going to play this year. He's out. you got a guy at that age with that kind of money on the line, and he's just not going to play for a year,
dude,
which
that's
means
bizarre,
it is.
It's completely bizarre. Like, I don't see how he jumps back on the train. I think that train has left the station. I
well,
don't
they said
Ben
back
Simmons
in training camp
again.
That they're not going to move him unless they get the deal they think is fair for what his value is. And the problem is, I have no idea what the hell his value would be right now.
I don't see how anyone possibly could. Last time we saw him, this guy was quite literally allergic of shooting the ball. Allergic
yes.
to shooting the ball in the fourth quarter. Last time we saw him play. Wouldn't shoot. Could not shoot. So you talk about a guy where he's got a max deal, athleticism through the roof, handles through the roof, defensive player of the year type of talent. But last time we saw Ben Simmons, he would not shoot. Not could not shoot, would not shoot.
I wouldn't take the chance Hayes of getting burned with that. I wouldn't do it.
Well, and that's why, you know, we bring on a guy like Brian Windhorst. Here is Brian from ESPN, NBA Insider. Do you have a read on Philly and their leverage and the value of Ben Simmons at this point, Brian?
I mean, you know, there's so much stuff that's come out of Philadelphia in the last 5 months that it's very, very difficult for me to hear something and trust it, because there's a lot of games being played, and I'm obviously not on, you know, I'm not talking to them directly within their trade calls, but the reality is you want to get down to absolute brass tacks. They don't have a trade they like. They didn't have a trade they liked in June when he first asked. They didn't have one in August when he went public. They didn't have one in October when he didn't show up. They don't have a trade they like. They've looked at it a dozen different ways, you know, with probably each opportunity. They can't convince themselves to it. So to me, this comes down to whether or not either Joel Embiid or ownership, because I think those are the two people that could have the power to basically say do something. And if neither of those sides say we have to do something, I don't see how a trade all of a sudden is going to materialize that they like when they've waited for so long.
You just mentioned Embiid, and it wasn't too long ago, Brian, where people were talking about him not taking it seriously, his craft seriously, the diet, didn't know how to eat, who knows what he's going to turn into. But every day on Twitter, there is a timeline of Joel Embiid's last 10 or 15 games, and he's been dynamite. Has he kind of turned the corner and elevated himself into like this megastar now? He seems like he's certainly gotten it.
Well, he had an MVP-level season last year. He just had some injuries and couldn't play enough games. And Jokic played every game, and that made a big difference. But he was this last year. In fact, some of his statistics were higher last year than they were this year, if you can believe it. And, you know, when you look at the history of the Philadelphia franchise, you've had some amazing performances there. You've had Will Chamberlain. You've had Allen Iverson. You've had Charles Barkley. And the year he's had is right up there. I mean, Will puts up numbers that are not comparable. So, you know, you got to wait for the era. But as good of a season as anybody in Philly has ever had. And they're in sixth place. And for a team that's paying the luxury tax, for a team that has been positioned to challenge, they were the number one seed in the East last year. For them to be sitting in sixth place getting this season from Joel Embiid is an extreme disappointment. We know why, but you want to cut it any way you want to cut it, it's an extreme disappointment.
With Brian Windhorst of ESPN, we had you on about a month and a half ago, and at that point it was, I think, accepted throughout the NBA. The two leading candidates for MVP at that point, you know, a quarter of the way through the season, it was Steph and KD. Since then, Steph, his game is, you know, his stats are not as, you know, off the charts as they were. Kevin Durant's dealing with injury. Feels like Embiid has now moved into a driver's seat, and I think Jokic should be right there with him, who's in the same spot in Denver. Missing his go-to guard, who's out based on injury, not based on wanting to request a trade. But Denver's sitting there in the sixth seed. And everything you said about Embiid, I mean, screams at you the stats. I think Jokic has been as impressive, if not more, Brian. Like, Jokic, this
sure.
Dude's crazy.
Yeah. Two centers in an area where centers are supposedly devalued.
Right.
Playing on sixth-place team. Completely cuts against the grain of what you typically would see in an MVP race. You know, I think there's only the last few years we haven't played full seasons, so I don't think this stat quite holds, but like for 25 years there hadn't been a player on a team win the MVP that didn't have at least 50 wins. And maybe they'll both get there because their teams are, you know, gonna, I expect, to get better as the season goes on. But it's a very unusual MVP race. And Steph is certainly still right there. He's struggled since Draymond went out. But he could certainly still rally back. But it is, you know, you didn't mention Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Right.
Giannis is having a spectacular season as well. And the Bucks are kind of just hanging around. But they're in, you know, I think they're two games out of first place in the East. So I don't know how much team success is going to play into it. If you know, Embiid, I think they're 2.5 back of first place. If Embiid keeps playing this way, the Sixers, without Simmons or without Simmons' trade, somehow climb up to one of those top two seeds, in addition to his statistics, that would be very impressive. And if Jamal Murray comes back and the Nuggets can get up there and you know, make a run at the end, that would also potentially help them.
Well, prior to having you on, what led us into that Ben Simmons conversation is we were talking actually about James Harden and the different reports coming out of Brooklyn as to whether or not he's happy or not or wants to leave at the end of the season. What's your understanding on his mindset in Brooklyn, James Harden?
Well, he turned down a $160 million extension at the start of the year. And at that time, obviously the owner and general manager, Joe Tsai and Sean Marks, wanted to know why. You know, because they were offering him a huge amount of money. And he told them at the time, from what I am told, this is not a commentary on Brooklyn. It's a commentary on me wanting more money because he can guarantee himself about $70 million if he lets his contract go out this year and then build a new one off of that. It's a straight financial decision. And, okay, they took him at his word for that. But then this year hasn't gone well. And repeatedly, James has said, you know, he's expressed frustration at Kyrie Irving's situation. You know, he had a great game on their road trip to Texas last week, I think it was, and they asked James about it. And he said, that's why we need him every night. You know, he was talking this week about their inconsistency, and he said, you know, we have inconsistency on who's available. And certainly that means some of the guys who have injuries, but it also means Kyrie. And, I mean, again, put yourself in his shoes. He forced his way there to play on the team with Kyrie Irving, and Kyrie's not playing half the game. He got the vaccine. I don't know if he wanted it or not, but he got it. And so I'm sure he's frustrated about it. Does that mean he doesn't want to be there long term? Does that mean he's going to leave an extra $70 million on the table? No. But the reason why people are looking at this is because Simmons doesn't have a home yet. And if the Sixers can't find a home for Ben Simmons after the trade deadline, and the Nets have a poor end to this season, which maybe they will, maybe they'll win the championship, people are starting to connect the dots. And I certainly understand why they're connecting the dots, but right now we're making a lot of suppositions.
With Brian Windhorst of ESPN, based on the history of Masai Ujiri, Bobby Webster, and the Raptors, Ben Simmons has been linked here before. They've clearly never committed to anything publicly, nor would you expect that they would. But their point guard position right now is very unique. Like, Fred VanVleet's been injured. He missed the last two games. But Fred's playing more minutes than anyone in the NBA, and he's having a spectacular season. And Goran Dragic is in Miami and not coming back. And then you got Delano Banton, who's actually been really good for him, especially recently, and Malachi Flynn, both young point guards who I don't think Nick Nurse wants to give a lot of minutes to. In terms of Simmons, the offseason, the Raptors, could you see a connection there based on the lack of depth or the youth at this position once you get past Fred VanVleet?
I don't think that the Raptors have what the Sixers are going to want.
Right.
I mean, short of including Barnes, which is an absolute non-starter, I think there's literally like seven or eight teams in that boat who have sort of borderline all-stars or sub-all-stars that they can offer, and Philly has held the line on what they want. They want a bona fide all-star. And, you know, Daryl Morey gave an interview last week in Philadelphia. It was one of the most amazing interviews I've ever heard, because to say it was all over the place is an understatement. But he said that, you know, the way Embiid is playing only puts more pressure on making sure that this Simmons trade is a home run. because if they do sort of a squishy deal, it wouldn't be fair to Embiid. And, like, even though I know Daryl doesn't tell the truth on purpose a lot of time, I agree with that. I mean, I agree with him being picky on Ben Simmons. Now, we disagree on whether I think this has helped his value and whether he'll get it. But I agree for him waiting, trying to wait for something to happen that he can get a player. And so I just don't see the Raptors having what's necessary to do it.
Brian, do you know any details of what Draymond Green's getting up to with TNT, kind of his role or what his obligations or what he wants to do, what he's allowed to do, and how the ripple effect of his teammates, coaches?
Well, I mean, you know, at ESPN we routinely have coaches and players who are still active come on to do shows, especially in the postseason. So, and Draymond's done that before with TNT. So I'm sure it won't be any different. You know, I know Draymond a little bit, and I know he's really smart. And he's really smart trying to lock down a lucrative post-career job. Like, Charles Barkley's made way more money sitting on that step than he did on the basketball court. And but I don't think Draymond will do anything that is going to cause any problems. He's a pretty smart guy.
Well, it's definitely unique in terms of what we've seen in the past. We'll see where it goes. Always great catching up with you. Thank you, Brian.
Enjoy your weekend.
There's Brian Windhorst of ESPN. Yeah, that came down earlier that Draymond Green has signed an exclusive deal with the NBA on TNT. So I wonder, actually, we should have asked him, like, does that mean ESPN can't interview Draymond Green? Like, will he go on?
Yeah, I wonder the rules.
I don't know. I mean, Draymond can control it. He's under no obligation to do an interview with any other network. But if ESPN calls him up and goes, you know, Scott Van Pelt wants to have you on after the game, is he going to say, absolutely not, I'm a TNT guy? I would assume if you're TNT, wouldn't you want that? Like exclusivity?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Spicy meatball right there.
Yeah, it is, for sure. Like in the NBA Finals, that's an ESPN ABC entity.
Platform, yeah.
And
yeah.
If Golden State's in the NBA Finals, I would think Draymond's probably going to be featured in that. But I also saw... And I'm not surprised because I still think he's the best of the best. Al Michaels is 77. He's been linked to Thursday night. Amazon down in the States has taken over the Thursday night package.
Right.
Sounds like Aikman might.
And they
got
to get a crew together.
Yeah, and it looks like there's a lot of smoke out there that Aikman. This could be his last weekend calling for Fox. He's been calling games there for like 20 years.
Wow.
And he may move on, and maybe that's why last week he was like, "Oh, nice, thanks Fox for sending me down here instead of sending me to Dallas," because he kind of knows where he's going and he doesn't really care.
Right.
But There's rumors and reports out there that Amazon could be after Michaels and that it's likely going to happen, but also that ESPN is circling back, which I don't know how Steve Levy would feel about that. But the fact that Michaels is 77 and still sounds as good as ever and has leverage with two massive companies, it's just like, what a career. You know, can you imagine being at 77 and ESPN?
People
and
banging
Bezos
down your door with cash and private jets at 77.
I didn't tell you guys when I was in St. Louis, I sat and chatted with Joe Buck for a while.
No way.
Yeah, he was there. You know, he's friends
like
with
supporting
Pronger.
Prongs and...
Yeah, he's friends with Pronger, so he was in the box with us.
No way. How was that?
I know him. It's weird. I know him from when I played there, 20 some years ago, but he wasn't the big Joe Buck, like his dad
now
was
he's
a
man
legend,
of
right?
Fox.
Like, yeah,
yeah,
now he's like
World
the guy.
Series and Super Bowls.
There was another guy there, Dan Dierdorf.
Dan Dierdorf.
Yeah,
oh, yeah,
he was there right beside him, and I was like, that guy looks familiar, and chatted them up. I was having a few drinks, and it was awesome. But like, all I could think of when I think of Joe Buck now was when he was like, "Can you guys stop sending me?" What was it?
Sex tape. Request.
Sex tapes, yeah.
Yeah, early into COVID, people were sending him via, like, DM.
Yeah.
Hey, can you play-by-play our sex tape?
Didn't he open his DMs and was like, you know, hey, I just want to, you know, I don't, what did he say? I want to stay current with my play-by-play. Ideas or something?
And some people were saying, hey, here's my kid hitting a T-ball. Can you do a play-by-play?
Yeah, and he was having fun with it, right?
Gary and Denise sent one from Valentine's, you know, back in 1989 and said, hey, do you think you could hook us up here? And I guess once the ball got rolling, as we addressed it a couple of years ago, The mistake he made was urging people to stop sending him sex tapes, because it would have just been a hurricane of tapes coming in after
that. A mountain of tapes. But it was neat to see him. Like, you know, now he's such a big name. He's a polarizing guy, though, right? I always see trends on Twitter. Is there some people
they
that get after
him,
right?
Like we are in a much smaller bubble, but we can, right. I guess, join in on the conversation of being public and right. voicing your opinion or being a public figure and speaking in sports and how some people are going to love you, some people are going to hate you just naturally. And that's what happens with the big guys, like Michaels. Michaels is pretty universally loved, but there are right. definitely people that wouldn't like him. They just wouldn't like his style or wouldn't like
right.
his voice or his approach or think that Al Michaels hates their team, so I can't support Al Michaels.
Yeah.
You know, the same thing with Buck and Jim Nance. Like, I thought Nance called a great game the other night. Like, that Chiefs-Bills game, that finish,
yeah,
that throw to Kelce, like, you go back and listen to that call, Nance was right on his toes.
Unbelievable.
Man. It was just a great call.
Yeah.
That
can make the game for an experience, right, to watch it.
Oh, you got to have so the right
the, yeah, the color of the play-by-play guy butchers it, like, it's not as
doesn't
enjoyable.
Feel the same.
Right.
Yeah, it's entertainment. It's a part of the product, and Al Michaels is just synonymous with big football games.
I agree.
Big time.
You guys know I'm in studio, right? You can see.
Like, yeah, of course. I meant to ask you. I was going to start the hour saying, what's going on here? What are you doing?
I'm on the Sens panel tonight, so I'm going from here to that.
Okay.
The lighting's different. People are like, did I get a fresh dip? And I do not. I swear
I
on my
kids. I didn't want
kids,
to address that.
I swear on my kid's head. If you actually look.
It looks like the jet black.
It's Jimmy
The gray
Bennett.
Is coming through more.
I don't know.
I haven't touched my head since the one time that we discussed, and I've got a haircut since, so I think that's gone.
So are you suggesting that maybe Jim Benning was a victim of poor lighting all these years?
Okay, so
and
let's
it wasn't
just,
jet black, new tar?
And brown and gray undertones?
I'm going to bring it up now. You guys pay attention to the lighting today as opposed to what I'm going to look like tomorrow back in my house. Because the lighting in my house, I believe, is softer and kind of just different. Here, you're right on a platform, right? Like, this is...
It's a loud lighting.
It is a loud lighting, but it seems like it's darker here, but it's not. If anything, it should highlight some of the grays coming in.
You should own it, then. Own it. Oh, I mean, if that's just natural jet black...
It's not natural jet black.
Lettuce.
If you see it in real life, I was talking to Mulls, it's... It's exactly what it was yesterday. Like, I haven't touched it.
All right.
So, people are like, noodles with the fresh dip. I'm like, actually, I've only done the dip once, and you guys, I called myself on it.
Well, it got picked off pretty. It was kind of a Giuliani. Wasn't there some leakage going on?
There was leakage. Remember, I had to show you. Like, it burnt, like, the side of my head right here. But that was
Rudy Giuliani's hair dye leak?
Yeah, well, he was, like, defending Trump or something. Wasn't he doing something ridiculous where he was, like, right in the public, and it was 1,000 degrees out, and it just dripped?
Got away from him. It was
and it was 1,000 degrees out because the story goes that he arranged a presser at some Four Seasons, and they went to some car. They were set up shop
like
at a
meat flagging plant or
something. Yeah, or like a used car, Four Seasons used car, and that's where he was set up. It was ridiculous.
Yeah,
and
that was quite the
his hair dye started leaking down his head.
Yeah, but I listen, it's good to know. It's all natural. It's all good. The lighting, I think that's a hookup, personally. I got to get back in there, so I want to get that same lighting cooking over here. We're tracking the farmers. I'm in big trouble. Big trouble, unless my boy Adam Schenck, who I've always been a supporter of, or Tringali has himself a weekend. Justin Thomas and John Rahm are tied for the lead at 13 under, and those are both your picks.
Dude, you can have Schenck. You want Schenck?
You
want
to give me Schenck? Why would you?
Oh, you can have him.
Schenck?
Yeah.
What?
Nah, I don't. You need a W. You don't want to give me Schenck. I can't take Schenck 36 holes in. You got Thomas. You got Rahm. You got Billy Horschel. Of course, he's kicking around. You got Scheffler up there. I have no one. Like, I'm toast. I'm out. I'm rooting for the field, basically. But it looks like it's going to be JT and John Rahm. John Rahm was snapping today, too. Did you see the video of him taking chunks out of the tee box? Because
he loves it.
What's
he loves
his
it.
Problem? He's in the lead. Anyway, caught up with Sheldon Keefe earlier today. His take on the power play last night, blowing leads. His comments in New York after the game last week, soft and playing without purpose. He addresses that extensively. We'll let you hear it. We'll get into it next. All right, Leafs coming off a big win last night in a shootout, but still they dominated that game last night. Their power play was on fire, and we had a chance to catch up with Sheldon Keefe earlier this afternoon. Only Noodles and I caught up with Sheldon Keefe earlier this afternoon. This is a live shot of where we're going with Sheldon Keefe up on TSN 2. And began by asking him about his team's performance last night and how he thought the whole game played out.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to be too excited when, you know, once again, you have a lead and you give that up. Both in how I felt through the game and being on the bench and then watching it back today, there's not too much for us to be too upset about there, other than the fact that we just didn't make good on our opportunities at 5-on-5 to really build a substantial lead and blow the game open. You know, and then there's mistakes inside of that, right? I mean, the 3-2 goal, just after scoring on the 5-on-3, like, that's one you just can't give up. You know, we've got to be more aware there and got to be better there. And coming out of a timeout, I put a lot of that on myself, is just keeping our guys sharp and aware in that moment. But, you know, and then really making little mistakes along the way. But overall, I just thought we played a good hockey game and put ourselves in positions to have success and to win the game. So I think ultimately getting the extra point in the shootout is warranted and deserved in this case. So we'll take the game and continue to work to clean up those little details that don't hurt us in the end, regardless of whether or not we're building our lead and making good on those chances.
So, Sheldon, you play in a market where if you go out there and change up the lines, it's the lead on SportsCenter. So you got to take us through. Everybody's talking about these new lines. The team's playing well, but Sheldon Keefe decided to change up the lines. Take us through your thought process of doing that.
Well, really, I mean, the biggest thing is that it's the first time really the entire season that we've been healthy. And I'm trying to think back, we went into Edmonton and played, we were close to healthy there, just prior to that. Obviously we lost Marner. These games feel like forever ago, but, we having Mikheyev back and kind of getting through the worst of this COVID situation now, and felt like our forward group is healthy. So it's, you know, I've had things that I've wanted to look at really since training camp, to be honest. You can remember in training camp, we didn't have Matthews all through training camp. And then right around the time we got Matthews back, we lost Mikheyev. And then we dealt with different things along the way. So I just thought a combination of being healthy for the first time and the two practice days leading up to a game day is just thought it was the right opportunity for us to give a different look and have some time to adjust to it and get everybody comfortable with it. I think it's really important that we try some things like this. We have a good idea of some things that work really well that we can go to at any time, be it short-term fixes in games or if we just decide that we're not liking what we're seeing, we can adjust back. But I think it's important, and the health and the depth and the skill sets of our players that we have throughout the lineup give me greater flexibility, so I wanted to utilize that.
Sheldon, obviously your third pairing on the back end, young guys, assess where they're at in their progression, and, you know, if you're happy with them, you'd like to see more, and basically, you know, they're getting really well-earned experience on the job. Do you see, a progression that you're happy with and comfort level with that third pairing?
Yeah, I have been. You know, I think we look at it, you know, if we go back to the Ranger game there, and obviously no Muzzin and Hall in a big game like that on the road against a very good team, and it was a huge opportunity for those guys. You know, Liljegren had spent a good period of time playing with Muzzin previously, but it's different, as you would know. When you're playing against a team like that on the road without having the insulation of a veteran and responsible defensive player like Muzzin. And I thought that those guys actually started that game really well, like our whole team did. And then just, as our team broke down a bit, it made it a lot harder on those guys. And we saw that. But I really liked how they bounced back in another difficult building to play in, a different type of team than the Islanders, but extremely physical, very loud, and combative fans and an intense game. And those guys, I loved how they just played with poise. They knew contact and physicality was coming, but they made plays. They moved the puck up to our forwards and defended hard and well. So, you know, I look at those two as good examples of them bouncing right back versus allowing things to snowball. And I think that is a very important sign that young players have taken a step, because, you know, no player, regardless of your experience or your talent, is going to be great every single night. It's the ones that are more consistent and can bounce back quickly that stay in the league and can build a career. Those that allow things to snowball while they go back to the minors, generally speaking. So that was a really good sign for me where those guys are at.
Chatting with Sheldon Keefe, head coach of the Maple Leafs. You mentioned the Ranger game last week. You had comments about your team after that game that led to a lot of conversation in this city. Said that night that they played soft, your team played soft, played without purpose. When you make a comment like that or comments like that after the game, how much of that is directed solely at the effort that night and what you saw in that game that night? And how much of it is big picture, driving home a message for the end of the season and in the playoffs, which is really what you're driving towards?
I mean, really, just I'm talking out of the emotion of that game. I think I referenced more than one time that, you know, today, that's how I felt we played, or today our play was, or we were. I'm more referring to that specific night, and that's really where I went wrong. And this is not only my choice of words, but leaving things open for interpretation. It's my job to be very clear and very direct about how I'm feeling, and not leaving things open for interpretation, in particular in a market such as ours. Things can get away on you, and that was on me. That's why I felt it was important to clarify when I had the opportunity the next day. Because really what I was getting at, and I wasn't even really making reference to the fact anything to do with our individuals. It was more about how we were playing as a team. And when we break down in structure, it becomes very easy to play against. And as a result, you end up leaving guys wide open at your net and giving clear looks at your net, versus us really, you know, focusing on the defensive piece and having purpose in that. We just we're going to do whatever we can to defend our net and make it hard to get to the net through our structure and our layers that we have. And that's how we want to play. It's on me to be very clear with how I speak. I certainly wouldn't change how I felt about our game and that, but, you know, obviously if you do it over again, you'd be more clear in how you speak, because I left things open to interpretation and things go awry when you do that. But really what I was referring to is just how we played as a team. You know, we referenced the young defense we had on that night, and we needed to play extremely structured and in groups of five to make it easier on our team and harder on the opposition. And when we don't do that, it becomes very easy to play against. And that's why that Ranger game, of all the ones that, you know, all the leads we've given up here in the last little while, stood out to me and was different, because I just felt that we didn't adhere to the structure that's necessary to play within that. I mean, if we're playing against a team that just breaks us down and they end up finding their way back in the game, that's one thing. But when we don't adhere to the standards and habits that we need defensively, that's unacceptable. So it's on me to communicate that better to the media. I do think I was pretty direct and clear with our team, but when it comes to dealing with the media and my opportunities to address our fans and the media, I've got to be, you don't do a better job of that.
No, you're good, bud. That's all good.
Well, I mean, I think you understand that it's a trigger word for the fans and the history of the team, your recent history in the playoffs. I don't think that's a surprise to you, Sheldon. I mean, it's a massive fan base. Everyone's split on, you know, where this team's going, what they've got, and what you're hoping to prove come playoff time. But in terms of the playoff messaging, like, how often do you allow yourself to bring that up with your team during the regular season? Do you put the cart before the horse and use examples and say, if we play like that in game seven in the playoffs, we're in trouble? Do you do that, or do you just stick into the moment?
I think, I mean, we stick with the moment because our guys know what we're building towards. I mean, I don't need to throw it in their face every day. They know what, they know what's going on. They know why we're practicing the way we want to practice and why we're playing the way we want to play and what's required. I mean, never mind the playoffs. I mean, just to keep pace in our own division, this is how we need to play. So, you know, let's build towards building something that's sustainable. So when things get difficult, which they were the other night in New York, you know, we're playing, we've got some key guys out of the lineup. We're playing on the road against a good team that's going to push their way back and the crowd's getting behind them and all those things. Things are hard. So let's deal with this well. That's where we need to dig in even more and rely on our structure and play together as a group of five and support our goaltender. All those kind of things have to happen in those moments in particular. And, you know, I think for the most part this season, we've done a really good job of that. That's, you know, that in combination with the talent that we have has given us a chance to keep pace with the elite teams in the NHL. You know, but wasn't to the standard that I thought was appropriate for that night or what was needed, and that we need to have success over the long term when things get really difficult. And especially coming off of that, you know, Colorado, Vegas, St. Louis trip, came home, that was us kind of getting back into it, playing in full buildings again. You know, we hadn't played games for quite a while. We come home, we had some time to reset at home, a couple practices, and then we got out to New York. I was expecting us to play even better than we had been, and I thought our start was terrific. And I was obviously disappointed with how we responded after that. But we're moving on here as a group, and I think we'll be better having gone through that.
Sheldon, you mentioned your goaltender. I mean, Jack Campbell's been fantastic this season. Your schedule with the rescheduled games that have been postponed and stuff is going to get very, very busy down the stretch here. Do you have an idea where you want, you know, Jack to land as far as starts, you know, getting Peter in the net a lot more to get his confidence and consistency going? I mean, is there a thought process? Or I mean, you're trying, health obviously is a big factor, but, you know, you try and lay it out kind of week to week, or is it literally game to game just based on how things are so unusual within the COVID era, we'll call it?
Yeah, you know, we always sort of project things out, you know, week to week or even through the month. You know, we have a general plan that one that we only, you know, it's really between the goaltending coach, Steve Rier, and myself, frankly, and we keep it that way because we know we're really going to address it day to day as we go through it. But you have a bit of a projection and try to make sure that you have a plan to manage things well, but we never really commit to it or don't communicate it to anybody else, including the goalies, until we absolutely need to, because we've got to monitor the goalies themselves, their health, their energies, what's happening with our team, all those types of things. So we fully expect and know that we're going to need two goalies. You know, even just our decision to play Mrazek the other night in Long Island, that's part of our plan. Just to, we need to get Peter more starts because before long they're gonna be coming with great regularity. So we want to keep him moving and get our team comfortable playing in front of him, get him comfortable in the net. Yeah, that's important. Managing Jack's workload is important. It's been really challenging here since we've come back in January just because we haven't played a lot of games. So it's a combination of we need to get Mrazek going, but also Jack's been sitting for a good period of time between every game, even without playing Peter. So that's been a little extra challenge for both goaltenders, but you know, the calendar is going to turn here soon and the games are going to come fast and furious and both guys have to be ready for that. And we believe they will be.
Well, Sheldon Keefe, you guys got hit by COVID hard in terms of positive tests. As far as we know on the outside, it doesn't sound like anyone had a really arduous time going through it or a really difficult time going through it. But now that you're kind of through that wave, and not that everyone had to quarantine, not everyone has tested positive within the room and the organization, but a large majority, is there in a weird way a sense of relief now that you got through it? You know, you guys can move on. I don't know how that affects daily testing and the way you operate, but are things different today in terms of the COVID approach and the mood because you guys are already through it?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say, Brian. I think, you know, we've, as you said, we've been through the worst of this here. We've got a number of staff and, you know, a very small number of players that haven't yet been through it. But and those guys continue to test daily. But otherwise, you know, they call it a testing holiday or break or whatever they call it for, I believe it's at least 90 days. Nobody's testing. So it's a little extra peace of mind and a little more normalcy, if you will, to your day. So, yeah, I think there's some positive and peace of mind within that. I think most of the league is now pretty much at that point. And the fact that, you know, with rare exception, I suppose, there hasn't been too difficult of symptoms. So that helps. Obviously, we're still going through stricter protocols and stricter measures that the government and the league are putting in place that you know, you're adhering to, depending on what city you're in and all those kind of things. And obviously, we know the challenges we're going through here in Ontario specifically with no fans and mask mandates and stuff like that. But that's all part of it. And, you know, the fact that we get to continue to play hockey and perform for people is obviously a positive that we're grateful to have that chance.
Yeah, I think that's 100% accurate. Leaf fans, they may not be in the building, but they're watching for sure and following along. And you guys coming off a big win last night, back in action on the weekend. So best of luck moving forward. We always appreciate you finding time for us, and we'll do it again down the road. Thank you, Sheldon.
Okay, got it.
There's Sheldon Keefe, head coach of the Maple Leafs. And, yeah, feels good about his team. Keeps hammering home certain points, which is natural for any coach, but felt pretty good about his team last night, and also concedes that before they even get to a playoff position and playing playoff games, you just got to be in a race here with the other teams in your division.
Sure.
Florida, Tampa, Boston.
Well, yeah, you know, I'm sure he wants to get to the point where other coaches have said, I don't know who said it last year, but when you get to the playoffs is when you kind of coach the least, because it's like playoffs, guys ready to go, and they know what's at stake, and they're putting it all on the line, and you just kind of sit back and let them go. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure he's hoping to get to that point.
Yeah, and you reinforce those habits during the regular season. And that's what he's, I think what he's doing is, hey, if I feel like I need to drop the hammer or reinforce some things or give somebody a jolt, I'm going to do it. Because you can't just change it that quickly on the fly when the floodgates are open, for example, when all hell's breaking loose in the playoffs. These players need to relax and make it habitual. So if it's a habit during the regular season, then they'll carry it on to the playoffs and kind of use that muscle memory. And
absolutely.
You know, it's going to be a challenge. Like there's, you know, I think we've said all along, there's probably 8 to 10 really good teams in this league. You want to be one of them, give yourself a chance. See what happens. You need health, you need star power, you need goaltending, all at the same time. And there's no guarantee that other teams are going to have that when you go up against them, but you got to give yourself a chance.
The Leafs are long overdue to put it all together, right? Do something come the spring. But they still got half a season left, more than that, for them to get there. And trade deadline still a month and a half away, more than that. So there's going to be a lot of action between now and game one of the playoffs.
Agreed.
That is for sure. We'll come back and recap a busy afternoon and look ahead to some games throughout the NHL NBA tonight. We're getting real close to making picks tomorrow. Al's brother, Team Al Dog, in a very good spot ahead of championship weekend. Only 3 more football games in the NFL. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, so we're talking about weddings earlier and, you know, just heroes at weddings doing things that cause a scene and make it very awkward for people. And we were asking people to write in with their stories. We got a lot of them coming in on Twitter, so we've been sifting through them, and there's some beauties in there. Generally, outrageous. It's a guy drinking too much and saying something he shouldn't have, or yeah, doing something he shouldn't have.
I read a couple. The DJ got into it, couldn't even function. Somebody, guy just had to get out there and start DJing.
That's the
no
best.
Idea. No
that
idea what he's...
Probably got 2,500 before he showed up.
Right.
And passes out, and then what? You're going to get the money back? Ruins the whole vibe.
Exactly.
Yeah, he's probably just playing shuffle on an iPod anyway.
I have never seen a DJ incapable of fulfilling the job requirement.
I haven't either.
That is tough.
Not a pro. Yeah. Not a pro.
I agree.
Anyway, Noodles?
Do you want that story? I'll try and be quick on
it.
The story is basically, I wasn't there, but it's like a lot of my friends went to this guy's wedding, and he's a pretty high-profile guy. And one of the groomsmen is kind of a class clown. So the wife, the bride, she warns him, Like, don't act up. Now, they're in California. There's a pool. It's a beautiful. She's like, I do not want to see any of you in the pool during the wedding or anything like that. So, sure enough, guys get liquored. The guy who is known to act up wades into the pool. So he's in the pool. Everyone's kind of laughing. He's dancing. The wedding photographer goes over to take a picture of it. And he's like kneeled down. And a guy who's liquored walks by him and gives the wedding photographer a kick in the ass. He goes into the pool.
No, with the camera.
With the camera, everything. Gone. The camera, the wedding video, everything's gone. And it like, I mean,
so gutless.
I'm envisioning this because you got two drinks, you're walking by, there's a guy with a camera leaning over the pool, and you just put your foot on his back and give him a little push.
Like, it's
and
the such guy a goes, D-bag move.
So gutless.
It's so gutless.
So funny, though. But it, yeah. It,
and the bride must have just
been. Oh, can you imagine? Yeah,
the camera
video?
Was probably screwed. $10,000 camera.
Yeah.
Exactly. What? So it didn't go so well, but. My understanding is there, you know, you had to sort out the camera guy and all that.
Oh, someone's getting paid, yeah. For sure. Someone's making money. The camera guy's going to snap.
I guess.
And, of course, it's the one guy they knew was going to be in the pool being a moron. He's in the pool being a moron, setting the tone. I love it.
So funny.
I love it. All right, Noodles, you're off to do panel work.
Yep.
So say hi. Who are you with? Lindsay Hamilton tonight?
Lindsay tonight and Mark Mathotz in Ottawa. So it'll be fun.
Say hi to Lindsay and Mark.
I will.
Enjoy that. Yep. We're out of here. It's going to be a fun one tonight. Bunch of games. Enjoy that. Enjoy your evenings. We're back tomorrow at
4 p.m.
We'll chat then.